My name is Brian Bonsenauer. Bruce Bishop is here with me today, and the title of this session is called The Process of Creativity, or Dialogues on the Process of Creativity. And for the tape record, this session was supposed to be yesterday, so we've switched those two around in the order of things. The as way of introduction, Bruce has been here at the Village for 7 weeks?
A little bit over.
Yeah. As a potter and artist extraordinaire, and keeping Gary company down in the pot shop as well. He's brought a number of his pieces today to kind of share with us some of his thoughts on the creative process, and also some pieces that are interesting as well from a point of view of the rest of this series of thinking about the universe being involved in this creative process. And just to kind of recap where we left, where we've come to in the series, is that we talked about the origin of the universe being involved in the creative process of everything, that we are part of that creative process of the universe. We're not separate. We're not a piece that's been added in to a universe that's already created, that we are a process emergent from the creative processes of the universe. That we flow out of that same creativity that brought forth the fireball and the galaxies and the supernova and the star and the earth. That process is built into our very being. But that also that we continue that process, that we take part in that process, that the universe acts through us to continue the process of creativity. And a phrase that Swim and Barry used to talk about this idea is up here on the board: the universe is a mutually evocative reality. Mutually evocative reality. So the universe evokes humanity. It brings us into being. Okay, that seems pretty obvious. We certainly wouldn't be here without the universe. But the other side, this mutualness to it, that we invoke or evoke the universe, that in the process of our creativity, we bring the universe into being in a real way, that we are part of that reality. And let me just read you just a short paragraph here from Swim and Barry that I think is most appropriate in this valley about what that means. Here are their words on it. From our quantum perspective on evolutionary cosmology, it just means thinking about the way that we see the world work now, using all of the understanding, scientific understanding of quantum physics and cosmology and evolution, we can approach the reality of a human stunned by a particular mountain only through a series of negatives. It is not accurate to say that the human has invented or created these feelings all by itself. It is not accurate to imagine that these feelings are present objectively in such a form within the mountain. It is not accurate to think that these same feelings would happen if a different sentient being were there, or a different mountain were there. These feelings are neither subjective fantasies of the animal, nor simply objective experiences of the mountain. Such profound feelings, such emotions that are even tinged with personal significance and with hints of destiny, are the mutual evocation of mountain, animal, and world. The inner depths of each being in the universe are activated by the surrounding universe. So, if we're a part of this universe, if we are taking part in the creativity of the universe, we bring forth depths of the universe that only we can bring forth. That the universe is not the same universe without you, and you, and you, and you. It's a much different universe. Okay, so that's kind of where we're at in this scope of creativity and the origin of the universe. And so it's our job, really, to evoke the universe through our creative activity, then it seems to me imperative that we learn as much as we can about that creative process. What it means, what it feels like, how to take part in it, what the pitfalls are involved in that. And so what better way than to have a creative artist here with us to talk about his sense of the creative process, and just let Bruce take that idea. So what is the creative process? How can we foster that creative process?
Well, I guess I'd like to start somewhere else.
Okay.
And just sort of go with it and see where it goes. Holden for me is a creative process, is a creative space, a creative environment. And is part and parcel of what has happened, which surprises me. I sit and I look at this and I go, well, yeah, I made those, but I have the strangest feeling like I didn't make them. There's a coming, for me, with the experience of what I call true creativity or true artwork or true, ooh, something's happening here, is when things happen at the same time. Jung called it synchronicity. Schwimm talks about an acausal link between two separate things in the universe. There's no messenger there, but they know they're happening at the same time. And with doing this artwork, I brought all of who I am, things that I've experienced, my love of the Southwest, my love of carving, with about three or four things that assembled here all at the same time too, to be part of the emergence of some stuff that, I don't know, I almost feel like this bear is an entity. I fashioned it, but so many other things sort of flowed through me in the process of it coming into being, and then it fired and it did its own thing in the kill, which I had moderate control over, sometimes none. And there were like inklings that sort of helped me to risk to begin to make a bare form. But then as I continued to go and make it, the bear sort of took over to the extent where was just fun. It's just like, it's no longer any work at all. It's just enjoyable. And the stuff flies off the surface as I'm carving, and it's just like, I know exactly what to do next. It's not thought, it's just action. And the shape, and then how to put the glaze, the blue glaze, it's an inset color. So in my experience, it's this feeling of being a channel of something wanting to come into being, and sort of stepping away enough, or being in it but allow it to come through, and then it's just like there's a joy there too, a sense that something important is happening. And that's how I feel about that bear. I feel like it's an important bear. I'm not sure why. But like it wanted to be there. I'm not gonna say that this bear is a living being, but somehow I think the universe wanted that bear here at this time. That's getting pretty esoteric.
Well, I think it fits right in with this idea that the universe evoked something out of you in your appreciation for a bear, mm-hmm. and then you evoked the bear into existence. I mean that you were part of that mm-hmm. of that process that brought that bear into existence. Mm-hmm.
And I guess I'd say real quickly too that as far as the creative process goes, usually it's there's this drag, resistance, a risk, fear. Do I really want to do this? Is this going to work? Is this? Do I want to invest in this? And then I put more energy into it, and I get to this stage where it's working. And then if it doesn't always happen, but sometimes it does, where the project just takes on a life of its own. And and that's the way a lot of these worked here. Another thing that was part and parcel of the creative process in putting these together was my conversations with Brian. I had reached a point where I was getting somewhat bored with my mark making, and I wanted to do something different. And I was beginning to work with turtles. I'd never made turtles before. Never made bears before either. And so I thought, well, you know, a turtle is a symbol of creation in many Native American myths. The turtle's a very important animal for Native Americans. And so I had this idea, you know, turtle shell being round, like the universe or like the planets or whatever. And in talking with Brian, got the idea of dealing with some of the elemental forces of the universe, i.e. the flaring forth, so the Big Bang,
right.
The original fireball, and then what arose from that fireball in the first, how soon was it?
First few seconds.
The four fundamental laws of the universe, being the electromagnetic force and all these others. So now this will show you, and I brought another bowl to illustrate. You can have the best design, worked out process, product, whatever, and if you don't take really good care with the last step, it can be all for naught. And Gary and I were just having too much fun at the firing and not thinking enough about the amount of reduction we were having go on, which means that the blue turns red in certain parts, and a lot of the design is gone. You can't see it. But I'll tell you what's here anyway.
Before you say that, let me just say that as Bruce and I were talking about these four fundamental forces, he's asking about sort of what physicists use, what markings or symbols they use to describe these forces. And in some ways, what he's carved on here is so much more than the little simple line drawings that I was able to provide for him. So much more of a sense of the forces on this turtle than the simple markings used. But the weaving of them together, I think, was truly an amazing, inspirational. So
you're too kind. I love it. Okay. This is the fireball, original flaring forth, and then this is hard to see. This section here has to do with the strong nuclear force with the quarks within the proton, and the P there stands for the proton. Then here is the weak nuclear force with the massive bosons, and that's represented by W and Z. And then the electromagnetic force represented by Y, and there's a symbol down here that you can't see at all that symbolizes that force. And gravity with G, and an arrow with symbolizing attracting elements. The back, I basically just did design work. I try usually to address each surface when I do this. Something I learned from my jewelry prof. She said, the back of the piece is just as important as the front piece.
Mind if they
sure
take a look at this?
Sure. This other turtle, this was the cosmic creation fertility turtle, whatever. you can keep on tacking names onto it. This is the Sun, DNA, Saturn, Jupiter, the Earth, a comet, and a little sperm on the legs here, and an egg and sperm symbol there, and basically the same stuff on the inside. It was exciting though, the carving, both of these turtles would have been better pieces of art if I had not used the blue, because the carving would have shown up and would have looked, you know, more like this, and you'd really be able to see the design. But, you know, you make mistakes, and sometimes those mistakes are really mistakes, and you, like, destroy the piece or whatever. Sometimes those mistakes are new directions, new paths, and open up new possibilities, as did this, which is also in the same firing, got too reduced, which means the blue turned red, but created sort of a mellow bluish red black and very rich thing that I like. And at least I know now that this is a possibility given a certain type of firing. A lot of these pieces represent new directions for me. Did things that I haven't done before. This is a combination of carving with inset glaze and then just the raw carving with a blue glaze on the back. I want to talk just a little bit about the baptismal font. This came out yesterday, and this is a collaboration piece between Gary and myself. He threw the piece, and I carved and decorated it. And this too was a sense. I had a really hard time knowing how and where to start with this. But I sort of had the feeling that I wanted to work with the head of Christ. And a few things came together visually for me. When I think about artwork, a lot of times I picture it in my mind. And it's like I'll have different elements in my mind that I can sort of fit in like a computer visual screen. And one was these wave shapes in blue, and the other was the head. So I started with the eyes, and from the eyes on out, I sort of created it. And a lot of these, a lot of this stuff I do not have planned out. It just sort of comes. Now on the outside, there are two hands, a black hand and a carved out hand, to sort of represent the holding of the bowl, whatever. And the carving is what I sort of call automatic carving. I don't really have in mind what's going to happen. I just start carving and I respond to that which I've already done, and that tells me what to do next. So it's this conversation with the piece, which I think a lot of artists know what I mean when I'm talking about that. You have to slow down enough that you're able to listen to what that design, what that mark, what that color is telling you. And that will clue you in almost exactly on what to do next. So it's a conversation. And you have to get it out there. You have to get it down to be able to converse with it. Blue Kitty here is, you know, in some ways, the most effective of the cat pieces, and also took the smallest amount of time, because the glaze work. This took a long time, and the glaze did not work because it screwed the firing. I should say. Altered the usual fire. I'm still dealing with I'm invested with the expectation of this being a certain way. And it takes a while for one to get used to the reality, and sometimes really like it, and sometimes just not still be all that excited about it, but you're able to live with it. This is Raku, different type of firing altogether, and something that you have even less control with. And that lack of control can really produce some neat things. But there's, and this will go into something else that Brian and I talked about, this fine line between control and chance. And I think, and I agree with Brian on this, that good art usually takes place in that fine line space between control, having enough stuff there that's there for you to access, both internally and externally, and chaos. The change of situation, your unknown, coming to Holden here to a certain extent has set me off balance, and probably has allowed me to create some stuff that otherwise I wouldn't have been able to, because my life in Illinois is pretty, you know, high school teacher life.
Ordered.
I won't say boring. It's not boring.
Right.
So, did you have something you wanted to say earlier?
Let me see if I can draw out some.
Okay,
some
I think that's about
it. Any other piece?
Oh, there's tons of more stuff.
Are you going to tell us about the significance of the animals?
Ah, there we go.
Yeah. There's a number of reasons why I do animals. One, people like animals. And I like people to like what I do. You know? And there's that aspect, you know. An artist is, I think an artist's place is within community. And is to somewhat, you know, not totally cater to the sometimes not great level of art taste, but you're doing something that I like to do, something that is appreciated, that has a place. And I think this one thing that the whole abstract expressionist movement of the late 50s and 60s was a really alienating thing within the art world. I mean, it, in a sense, it had to happen. And there were some really good things that came out of it. But my orientation is basically representational with a twist.
Mm-hmm.
So people, it's like you sort of bring them into something because it's recognizable, but then they have to sort of go, oh, this is not quite.
Talk a little bit about your sort of movement toward human figures. I thought that was quite interesting.
Oh, I will in a second.
Okay.
I'm done quite with the bears, or with the animals. Animals are fun to make on the wheel. These are all wheel generated.
Oh.
I threw them, pieced them together, and there's more things that I want to do that way. Okay, the totem fetish aspect. Native Americans, primitive cultures, carved animals as a, you know, part of their religious observance and in imbuing animals with certain spiritual powers. So there's somewhat a fascination with that idea. And on another level, I think that animals are our companions. They are so closely related to us biologically. Because of that, they're kin to us. They're part of us. They're in our psyche. They're part of our world. They need to be celebrated and lifted out and noticed. And apart from the piles of automobile junkyards, you know, it's like, yeah, there's the animal world there, and it's important. So it's a celebration of that and of the spiritual qualities that each animal sort of is imbued with. You know, a bear has a certain spiritual quality to it, or a characteristic. Yeah, I'd like to move into doing some of this mark making, carving on human forms. I mean, like, that's sort of the next progression, doing this stuff. And I'm realizing that a lot of you are only able to see part of this. Actually, I like this back half much better than the front half. I'm not ready for the human form yet. I want to continue doing more animals, maybe larger animals, and then eventually work with parts of the human body. I don't know if I want to try to take on a whole human, because I like to work large. And do the carving. Maybe using porcelain, which is a white, which would be white and black, which would be an entirely different look, much more stark. This, the Goshu, which is the dark slip on the stoneware, turns sort of a dark brown, dark brownish black. But on the porcelain, it's jet black, and it's pretty striking.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Let's see if we can draw out some of the ideas that you were talking about for sort of the process of creativity, and some of the things I've tried to put some of those things that struck me out on the board. And if questions come up that you have in that in this conversation, please feel free to interject those at any time here. I thought it interesting, the idea that sort of a sense of synchronicity and then allurements or attractions that kind of would get you started with thinking about a piece, and that paying attention to those took some time and some energy. You spoke about kind of needing to trust and a sense of this is a direction that I want to go, just paying attention to that.
Yeah, and I just remembered that one of the things that we've been watching these videos on Canticle to Creation, Brian Swing. And he was talking a lot about the timing of creation, this idea that, like, there's a certain time that comes in the lineal progression of the evolution and the unfolding of the universe where the time is right for something to happen, and it's right now, and you know, it happens big time. And it wouldn't be possible just a few whatever after that. It has to be at that point because the energy is there, the resources are there, the whatever. And there, he was using the example of the creation of atoms, I believe, that in the first... why don't you explain that?
Well, that the idea that there are these movements in the universe where the creation of atoms being one of them, where a few moments before the creation of atoms would only be possible with a tremendous amount of energy input, so that the temperature of the fireball is such that to hold an atom together, to hold the early hydrogen atoms together, would require a tremendous amount of energy to do that. And at the moment that the atoms come into being, the hydrogen atoms come into being, that the conditions are such that there's all of that energy gets channeled into creating the hydrogen, so that immediately you don't have 3 or 7 or 10 hydrogen atoms form. You have all of this hydrogen in just literally a tremendous, incredible amount of hydrogen created at once. And it's the time for creating hydrogen.
And it'll never be created again.
Right. That was the time. Hydrogen was created then. 70%, we estimate, of the universe is hydrogen. And it was created at that one time, and that's it. To create hydrogen now would take, again, tremendous energy to do that.
When I heard that, when I heard Brian say that on the video, it just is like right between my eyes, that being able to put that cosmic event and that cosmic universal law to a certain extent of timing within creativity, or timing of a creative act. In my own personal experience of being here at Holden, and all these things coming together, resources, people, ideas, urgings, and I didn't create one bear. It's just like, I look at my output and I was just like, gosh, where'd all this stuff come from, you know? And I was just like, you know, carving up a storm, and so I had a real deep sense, and still do, that timing, that to a certain extent, this was created now. It may not be possible later at a certain point. It was now.
And this is an understanding that's on many levels of our understanding of the way the universe is. That, for instance, the current understanding in biology is that if life were to disappear from the Earth today, that it would not reemerge. That the time when life was created was that time, and the conditions are not right for it now.
That would sort of indicate that these moments of that are, you know, ripe for creating something are finite, and that to not act on them is a waste of that energy and that gift. I'm sort of wondering, I don't know what I'm wondering, is I just drawn a complete point at that, because I think of all the times where words for something that I'm thinking that I should write or draw or anything, you know, I'm busy doing something and I think, oh, I'll put it down later, or I wake up from a dream and I think, oh, I'll remember this. And I don't push myself to remember that, and it's gone.
I think it's a real, it's a fine line, and it's really hard to judge what is a waste and what isn't a waste. You know, there was definitely a all systems go. I didn't have to twist my arm to get going on this. I mean, it was just like, not only was this stuff available to me, it was available to me internally. And so I think the universe or God or whatever works outside, inside, and the there are all these missed, supposedly missed opportunities for creativity going on all the time. But in looking at my life, sometimes those missed opportunities for creativity aren't exactly missed opportunities at all. They are alternatives or follow times that are going to help me be more creative when that other creative time happens.
I remembered what I was wondering. I'm wondering then, though, if you know, those moments of creative energy or inspiration or whatever you want to call it will run out the more you let them slip by. Like if you're going to be given any more of those. Given that, you know, it's just one of those one-time things, and how many of those one-time things can there be?
Maybe it's a sense in which there's a sensitivity to those creative urgings or those inspirations that can be dulled or can be awakened. And that that in a sense, I think part of our job in part of my desire to understand more about the universe and our origins within the universe is to try to awaken those sensitivities to thinking about this creativity, to try to be more aware of those opportunities.
But Megan, I think what you're bringing up is actually pretty profound, and I think that there are ways in which, you know, these moments are, they're continually, the paradox, they're continually unfolding, and also to a sense they are finite too, in that the universe, I believe, is a linear type of thing. It's not cycling back on top of itself. So it's a linear thing going in a direction. Then there are some things that are going to be not repeatable because you've passed that signpost. And so, in a sense, maybe it can be a sobering thing to think about for myself. You know, what things do I decide to let slip in my life as an artist or another? You know, will they be repeatable, or how many? You know, whatever.
There's a sense too in which you get, there's an energy then associated with that, because if this indeed is the moment for me to do this creativity, then I need to, you know, give energy to that. And if it's not going to be coming back, then I should, you know, take that energy, take the time and energy.
On one hand, I can see that it's possible, I suppose, that they're finite, although I'm not sure that I believe that. But on the other hand, you find that the energy, if you actually make time for it, claim it, internalize it, use it, that energy begets energy, that creativity begets more creativity.
Yeah.
There it is, in fact, it's not finite in that sense at all.
Yeah, well said.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
There were some other hands above me. Yeah, Tim.
Well, there is that conditioning, I think. I've done linear and cyclical. To me, it's always okay. How can we reconcile both? Because if that question lingers, it's usually both. So how do you put the two together? And Bucky Fuller has a paradigm where basically you're going up like that. Now that's like if you're working on yourself or doing like we just talked about. And there are times where you're just in that process of producing. And then you hit a wall, and you feel a wall in yourself as a human or whatever, as an artist. And then you have to spend some time doing some R&D and some personal work on yourself. And then, boom, you can produce it. And there are times where you feel, oh God, I haven't made any progress at all. I'm still in the same habits I was in when I was a teenager. You know, and I can't seem to get out of this. But as he put it, you might feel that same way, but you're definitely way advanced. And each time you're advanced farther, you may have the same dynamic going on, but just realize that it's just you're back here again, you're just going through a process again. It's good for you.
Yeah, thank you.
Sure.
The thing I'm trying to realize, but in our lives right now, it seems that a lot of people, if their life or their career isn't to be an artist, it's really hard when you feel like you want to. You have this creative use, and you're like, I really want to do this, but you have all this busy work you have to do. And it just really isn't the way.
In fact, Thomas Berry and Brian Swim, one of their main theses or main ideas is that fundamentally one of the things that is a difficulty with where we're at now is people's lack of access to their own creativity. That is really at fundamental a problem that's surfacing in health and the health of the environment and our understanding of ourselves and our relating to each other.
There is a sense in which I think our creativity is like muscles, and you have to exercise it and keep it stretched and flexible to be able to get to that next process. And I think there are a lot of people in our society that have quit using their creative processes. My own personal bias is that TV kind of anesthetizes us, so we don't have to use our creativity anymore. We just let things come at us and never really process them.
And the interesting thing is that the media is a form of art. I mean, there is art in all media. That is speaking to me very violently right now. I'm not sure what it is.
Just wanted to pop one thing into the soup. And that's the whole idea of time. The one thing that I notice when I am in the midst of working is how time sort of opens up and I don't know. There's a number of things I could at least.
You spoke of it kind of as a timelessness as we were speaking before. A sense of time not passing at all, being in the midst of that creative process. That there's almost no sense of time.
Yeah, and sort of as a result, sort of like there being an abundance of time, more than enough time to get everything done and enjoy everything and. Just like fully alive type of thing. And then other ways in which I experience time when I'm not in that flow is that everything is contracted and everything goes really fast. And I go through a year, you know, well, where did that year go? And like one is sort of, it's sort of like time is this illusion that on an experiential level, I just sort of have those two modes of opening up and slowing down, or being sort of uncreative, bored, and not noticing.
Mm-hmm. Ever since that over here?
Yeah. I've been wondering about ever since the movement began. Others have alluded to it indirectly. Is those of us who aren't artists of one type or another, I might ask this question. You have this creative experience through what you produced, and you've expressed that quite eloquently, your feelings on that. Does that carry over in other aspects of your life? You talked about boredom. Is the rest of your life boredom? Or do you have other aspects of creativity that parallel what you've done here? For us, the people who are artists, to have some encouragement.
Yeah. Very, very good question. Yeah. I mean, they're definitely... Well, I think... You see, I'm involved in the arts, and I'm an art teacher, so almost everything I'm sort of doing professionally right now is art-related, so it may not mesh exactly with what you're asking, but I love directing. I direct plays, and it's not visual art, but it has some of the same need for, like, going with the flow and being creative and making these risky decisions and teaching art is definitely a very highly creative thing if it's done well. So yeah, I think staying open to the creative moment, to the urging within and the environment without, and acting when those things are congruent with each other. You know, being aware of when can I create all those hydrogen atoms? And then, okay, and sort of, maybe means of disengaging and contemplation and prayer and meditation and quieting and listening to enable one to find out where those creative niches in whatever you're doing are, so you can expand those and then help and encourage maybe other people in your sphere to respond to your creativity and release their creativity and then start changing reality. It seems like that, you know, we have such an incredible impact on each other. And when one person can do just even one little sort of creative act, mm-hmm. real act, it's sort of like, ricochets. So I don't think everyone needs to be a visual artist to experience it, although I think many, many more people should be visual artists, and many, many more people would enjoy it if they got into it, but that there's many, 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 many places to engage the same thing and needs to be engaged. I think that's where our solutions lie, is something having to do with this process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, John?
The things you're talking about are so exciting, and this is something that I've been thinking a lot about and studying a lot. And the idea of flow, and I've been questioning that and looking it over for so long, and what is it, and how do we create it if that's possible in our lives, and create it on, you know, on call. And then I listened to a tape recently on the effects of music on body, mind, and spirit. And this woman talked about music and how musician in the act of making music actually uses 90% of the brain. And most of us think we use like 10%. And I've been thinking a lot about that, and also the idea of endorphins and the adrenaline flow that happens when you're in that state. And if you look at the fields like the creative arts, you know, theater and music and visual art and sports and writing and anything like that, when you're in flow, you're using right, left brain in connection, and everything is engaged, I'm assuming that you're using that 90% of your brain. It isn't just music. It's not limited to that. So I think, you know, what you're talking about can certainly be attained, or that high feeling of self-gratification, or just, you know, being able to produce something doesn't just have to be in the arts. You know, it can be just about anything we do when we're engaged, when we're creating that, or letting that flow through us, that flow.
Mm-hmm.
Very exciting.
Yeah. Just a mention about that too, there's creation spirituality now has been gaining a lot of movement, and the basic stance of that is that your life is your creation as well, and so to be involved in the creation of your life.
Yeah. I was wondering about things like, here we see this kind of visual art, but I'm thinking about the people, say, you go to the Smithsonian and you see the original shaving tool, like a sharp stone, then it got to be a blade, and then the electric thing. Mm-hmm. Or you look at automobiles, for instance, with the primitive engines, and then the hydromatic transmission electric starter, and then the thing you see today. Mm-hmm. Or even a thing like the father who started Boys Town, or Mother Teresa. Mm-hmm. Are all those things creation? Mm-hmm. I mean, they're in different ways. They're not like this, but
right. Yeah.
They're some kind of creation, yeah. I would say.
Well said. Yeah.
Something new.
This is
something new breaking out.
Yeah.
And it's poof. Just hasn't
kind of
been there.
It happens at a certain time, and it couldn't happen any other time, but it was right, and poof, it took place.
Mm-hmm. There is a phenomenon, too, where they've had some studies where, like, an idea would come to different people in different parts of the world,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
some things,
yeah.
that synchronicity,
mm-hmm.
and not knowing, and it's happened a number of times,
yeah.
where they didn't know. They were.
Very definitely in the scientific enterprise, that's mm-hmm. been the case. Mm-hmm. Megan, did you want to say one?
Oh, I was just going to say that when I'm an art teacher as well, and I get a lot of kids in my classes saying, well, I'm not doing this because I'm not an artist, and I'm artist stupid, then my response is, well, you know, how did you come to decide to wear that blue shirt with these green pants, or who built your house, or how do you think we have all this technology? I mean, this is all, my purpose for teaching art is not to turn everyone into, mm-hmm. you know, Leonardo da Vinci, but to get them to understand that creative thinking is, I mean, art is a way to understand how to think creatively,
mm-hmm.
and critically, and, you know, make those kinds of things. And it applies to absolutely every arena of your life.
Mm-hmm.
So when you're saying, you know, what can we non-artists, you know, or art appreciators to bring this message, I mean, it applies to everything.
Mm-hmm.
Conversations, relationships, you know, your job, how to solve. I mean, mathematicians are artists, physicists are artists.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're, because they're being creative. So.
Yeah. Thank you. Just to maybe tie up, I'm sure we could go on for a lot longer, and it sounds like an interesting idea to me, but the dinner is going to be served here soon. So let me just say that this idea of creating an interesting life is sort of the next topic in this series, and ties in with an understanding of destruction and creativity. And a quote that sort of presses in upon me with that is the idea that our job, our purpose in life, is to become interesting food, that we will eventually be consumed by the earth. And our purpose is to become, in that process, to become interesting food for that consummation. So we'll explore that topic some more tomorrow. I want to thank Bruce for being here and talking about his work. And enjoyed our chance to collaborate together and talk together. So thank you.